Our next presentation is by Dr. Jeffrey Ibbett, Director of Radiological Physics Center, Houston, Texas. He'll be discussing requirements for addressing respiratory motion in cooperative group clinical trials. Dr. Ibbett.
Thank you, Art, and good morning. I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to talk about this particular issue because it's clearly a new one and a difficult one for us to deal with, and an interesting problem, yet one that clearly has a very big impact on the conduct of clinical trials. I also want to acknowledge the contributions of several of my colleagues. Paige Nitsch, who's a graduate student at the RPC. Paige is giving a presentation closely related to this topic later today, and I would like to encourage you to see that presentation to hear more about this. Nadia Hernandez and Paola Alvarez, you've already heard about, contributed also to this. And our website, the URL is listed here, so if you are interested in more information about this, you can visit our website, and these slides will be posted there sometime next week. We're involved in this because the National Cancer Institute has recently written requirements that clinical trials proposed by the groups supported by NCM must address respiratory motion whenever it's an issue, and whenever IMRT is used. Excuse me. So, of course, this means any intrathoracic tumors, possibly breast, possibly liver, and even when IMRT isn't used, although the NCI guidelines don't specifically say respiratory motion must be evaluated, clearly, it's going to be an issue and have an impact, and it makes sense that in some way respiratory motion should be discussed. So this has been done in a couple of recent clinical trials. RTOG protocol 0438 is a trial looking at liver primaries and metastases. It doesn't involve IMRT, but the RTOG chose to require institutions to deal with respiratory motion in some way. And a proposed trial, RTOG 0618, again, it's an SBRT trial for treatment of lung tumors, but does permit IMRT, essentially if the institution is unable to meet the criteria of the protocol without using IMRT, they are permitted to use it. And so to participate in these trials, the institutions are required to demonstrate that they have the capability to deal in some fashion with respiratory motion. And there are requirements for that, and in RTOG 0438, the protocol specifically states that the organ motion due to respiration must be documented. It's called pre-evaluated and documented. Movement of the tumor or diaphragm has to be recorded. And if it can be shown that the movement in the superior and inferior direction is less than 5 millimeters, then it's acceptable to treat the patient without any further considerations and, of course, encouraging the patient to continue shallow pre-breathing. Excuse me again. If the motion exceeds 5 millimeters, then there has to be some sort of adjustment, some sort of compensation, active breathing control or voluntary breath hold or gating are the techniques that are recommended. And if the breath hold or gating systems are used, then end exhale position for treatment is recommended. And the institution has to provide data demonstrating the reproducibility of the setup and tumor targeting capabilities, and that data has to be reviewed by the RTOG Physics and Image Guidance Committees. And Dr. Galvin has been very much involved in writing those requirements and conducting the reviews and evaluations. So to help with this, the RPC has developed a liver phantom. Here's a photograph of the phantom disassembled. It looks a lot like thorax and pelvis phantoms, but it has a structure in it that simulates the approximate shape of the liver. There are two regions with targets in them, and they're shown disassembled here, but these two tall cylinders are dosimetry inserts that go into these holes in the liver-like structure. Two targets of different sizes. Then there are avoidance structures. There's a thing that mimics a kidney and a thing that mimics the stomach or something else, and a thing that mimics the spinal cord for people to avoid. And just as we know that there is motion, and I hope you saw that, you have to see it once, we've simulated the motion of tumors such as liver tumors by providing the phantom and a moving table so that the phantom moves on a ramp, and that means there are components of motion in the superior inferior direction but also anterior posterior direction. Now admittedly it's simple motion. You can see that this is a simple linear ramp, but nonetheless it complicates the situation a bit and forces institutions to take that into account. And the range of motion is 2 centimeters in this case. 2 centimeters superior, inferior, and 1 centimeter anterior, posterior. Sorry, let's see that again. So to be credentialed for the liver protocol, institutions have to request the phantom, and just as is the case with our other phantoms, we establish a priority for institutions who request phantoms. In the case of the liver phantom, there have been only a few requests, so prioritizing hasn't been an issue. We ship the phantom. It is a hollow plastic shell, so the institution fills the phantom with water, does their imaging, including 4D CT, prepares a treatment plan, and then delivers that plan to the phantom. We prefer that they drain the water out of the phantom before they send it back to us. And then the institutions have to send their data, their treatment plan, electronically to the ITC for us to review, and we can do a comparison between the treatment planning data and the measurements. So far, 6 institutions have requested the phantom for credentialing. 2 of these institutions have actually received the phantom twice, and 4 of the institutions have passed the process. But 2 of them, obviously, done the math, failed, and they failed because of superior to inferior shifts. And interestingly, both of these institutions claim to limit free breathing to 5 millimeters. So when you saw that little movie of the phantom moving, the movement you saw was sinusoidal 2-centimeter amplitude. When an institution tells us they're going to use free breathing because they can demonstrate the target motion is less than 5 millimeters, we reprogram that phantom to only move 5 millimeters in the superior-inferior direction, and of course less in anterior-posterior. So how did they fail? Well, here's a typical CT image of that phantom, and you can see one of the target structures in this picture. And I'm going to ask you to focus on that target structure because I'm going to show you data measured in this region, and in particular, profiles along either the right, left, anterior, posterior, or superior, inferior directions. And you can see, in this case, that the heart of the kidney structure, the spinal cord, and the rod that supports the heart structure. It's not visible in this picture. So, one of the institutions using the 5 millimeter free breathing, these are their data in the left-right direction, showing a comparison between the institution's calculations in the pinkish dots, and our measurements in the blue, more or less solid line. And here you see very good agreement. Discrepancies are on the order of a millimeter. But in the superior-inferior direction, we see a significant shift. Here again is the planned data showing the dose distribution centered on the PTV, which is indicated by the dark vertical lines. But the solid blue line shows the actual dose delivered in this plane, showing discrepancies of about 7 millimeters in this case. And we're quite baffled by this. Given that the motion was only 5 millimeters, it doesn't seem that the motion is the cause or the entire cause of the discrepancy here. Now, another institution used gating, and so because they were using gating, we sent the phantom program for 2-centimeter amplitude sinusoidal motion. We can program it to simulate breath hold, but not for gating. For gating, we use just the regular motion. And again, here's the institution's comparison between plan and measurements in the anterior-posterior direction. Good agreement, about a 3-millimeter discrepancy on this side, but not bad. And in the superior-inferior direction, very good agreement. So this institution was gating appropriately, turning the beam on and off at a point in the cycle where they were reproducibly positioning the target volume according to their plan. And here's the largest discrepancy is, again, on the order of a millimeter. So quite good agreement. Now let me jump to a slightly different topic. Some experiments that we've done with a CyberKnife system, actually two different CyberKnife systems, again looking at accommodation for respiratory motion. And again, I want to call your attention to Paige Nitsch and her presentation this afternoon in the auditorium. Paige will be presenting more information, of course. I'm just going to touch on one aspect of our measurements, and that is the addressing respiratory motion. Now, for these experiments, we use the lung phantom. Dr. Klein showed you an image and some data from that, and here are a few more images showing you the sagittal view and the axial views, but we can actually position the target volume in two different locations. We modified one of these lung phantoms to add fiducials, and you may be able to see the fiducials here in the axial plane and in the coronal plane. These were positioned according to Accuray's recommendations, and there are actually 6 fiducials. There are a couple in the spinal cord and one in the heart structure, and actually 4 in the lung, so 6 altogether. A treatment plan was generated at each of 2 institutions, one clinical site and then at the manufacturer's site in Sunnyvale. And in general, the treatment plans were designed according to the RTOG 0236 lung protocol and, for the most part, met the requirements of the protocol. And here you can see the target structure and the isodose curves wrapping neatly around the target structure, meeting those criteria. To treat the phantom, as was mentioned earlier, the Accuray system, the planning system, develops a DRR, and that's shown on the left here, actually 2 DRRs at 90 degree angles to each other. And in the DRRs, you can see very clearly the fiducials in the phantom. Then the phantom is set up at the treatment machine, and the X-ray imaging system that's in the room is used to develop images in identical configurations to the DRRs. And you may not be able to see the fiducials here, but the system has found them and has positioned these crosses on the fiducials, missing one of them here. And then it aligns the phantom based on the superposition of those 2 sets of images. And in this case, it was able to pair up all of the fiducials from the live X-ray images and the DRRs from the planning system. So once that was done, then the then the system, the robot, can follow the motion of the phantom based on infrared emitters attached to the surface of the phantom. And I'm not showing all of that, but I am showing here the model of the respiratory motion that is built by the system based on the comparison between the positions of the fiducials and the surface markers. Now, here's the actual motion of the phantom, and in this case, we're not using a nice uniform sinusoidal motion, but a tracing from an actual patient breathing motion that was captured at MD Anderson. So you see the respiratory motion is somewhat irregular and varied in amplitude, and actually quite challenging. Although, of course, with this phantom, the relationship between the internal fiducials and the surface markers is fixed. So the system built a correlation model, and that's shown in these lower three graphs, showing that it built its model quite successfully. And then we delivered the treatment to the phantom, and then evaluated the reproducibility of treatment and the tracking of the system by again looking at dose profiles in the region of the target volume in the left, right, anterior, posterior, and superior, inferior directions. And those graphs are shown here. They're small, so let me enlarge the superior, inferior direction because that's the most challenging. And what you're seeing here are three traces. One made with the phantom stationary, one made with it moving in a regular sinusoidal fashion, and then the one using the irregular patient tracing that I showed you. Each of these was repeated three times, and we're plotting the averages of those with the colored lines, and you may be able to tell that all of the colored lines fall within the two gray lines that indicate plus and minus 3% or 1.5 millimeter distance to agreement. The colored lines, the film data, fall within those bounds except in one location where they basically overlap the bounds. This indicates, in my mind, very good agreement not only between the planned data and the delivered dose, but also good agreement between different types of motion and no motion in this evaluation. So we're thinking now that we can use this system to test other planning and delivery devices and evaluate how well individual clinics are compensating for respiratory motion. So I hope I've given you a little look behind the covers here of the work done at the RPC, and I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Quick question. I assume you, for the Accuray data, you didn't account for heterogeneity issues that are known with the system?
I deliberately didn't say anything about the heterogeneity correction because that was not my topic here, even though I thought it was for a long time. But in Paige's presentation this afternoon, she will describe the results of comparisons between the plan and the measurements looking at the heterogeneity correction. In this presentation, we normalize the film data to the planned dose to eliminate any uncertainties due to the heterogeneity correction.
The other quick question is I assume it would be pretty complicated, but you said you used the actual patient motion, you recorded it in the Anderson and applied the phantom, so you must have had some kind of actuator with memory and just kept on repeating that motion over and over again?
That's exactly right, yes. We recorded data using the varying RPM system and captured about a 40-second duration of that. And then, yes, we just cycled that over and over again.
Thank you.